Welcome to the Mindful Moments for Families and Schools podcast. This is Kelly Winkler, your host. If you are a parent or a teacher who would like to have a more peaceful, calm, and centered environment, then you are in the right place. In this podcast, we will learn to weave yoga and mindfulness into your daily routines to help both you and your children be able to regulate your emotions, feel connected, and be resilient. I'm excited to share these incredible tools with you, so let's get started. Welcome back to Mindful Moments for Families and Schools. This is Kelly. I'm thrilled today to have on Michelle Amuson. Michelle graduated in 2009 with her BS in Health Promotion and Education, and later in 2013 with her master's degree in Occupational Therapy from the University of Utah. As a graduate student, she researched the benefits of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy in helping individuals with depression and comorbid substance abuse. Michelle currently works as an occupational therapist in a school district. She is passionate about the therapeutic benefits of yoga and mindfulness both emotionally and physically. Michelle received specialized training in teaching mindfulness to children using Dr. Amy Saltzman's A Still Quiet Place curriculum and Learning to Breathe, a mindfulness curriculum for adolescents to cultivate emotion regulation, attention, and performance. She is a 200-hour RYT yoga instructor with additional trainings and certifications in trauma-sensitive yoga classes and yoga for at-risk youth through the Trauma Center at the Justice Resource Center. She is currently in training with Brown University to become certified in mindfulness-based stress reduction. On her free time, Michelle enjoys hiking the Uintas with her fiance and two favorite mutts, Sawyer and Finn, and traveling abroad any chance she gets. It was a great conversation that I had with Michelle, so I'm excited for you all to hear it. So let's dive in. Welcome, Michelle. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled. And I would love for you just to start and just tell us about your journey, about you, your career, and then how you found yoga and mindfulness.
Yeah. So I'm an occupational therapist. And so I was introduced to mindfulness in graduate school, which actually it came at the perfect time. So I suffer from anxiety, and I guess I shouldn't say suffer, but I live with anxiety. And so in graduate school, that wasn't something that I really had picked up on a ton. I knew that I had a lot of that worrying and just the stress with school. And I kind of thought that was all pretty normal. But I was introduced to mindfulness and became really fascinated by it because it was the first time that I really became aware of my thoughts. And I started to realize that my thoughts didn't control me and this anxiety didn't control me, that there was another way that I could move through it. And I actually ended up getting selected to do my graduate research thesis with one of the professors who was trained in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy and mindfulness-based stress reduction. And so we conducted a study, and it was basically looking at, does mindfulness help people who are suffering from depression and who have comorbid substance abuse, does it help them return back to the activities that are meaningful? And as an occupational therapist, that's something that we really care about is this going to be something that helps them get back to the things that they care about? And so we ended up doing that study. Unfortunately, it was a really small sample size. And so the study was never published. But from that moment on, really mindfulness became a huge part of my life. And later after that, after graduating, unfortunately, during that time, I actually ended up going through a divorce. And so it was a really stressful time for me, probably for sure one of the hardest times in my entire life. And so I really used those tools of mindfulness to help me really ground myself during that time while simultaneously I'd graduated and now I was going to be working for the first time as an occupational therapist at a local children's hospital. So the mindfulness really started to play a piece in my life then. And then I started taking yoga classes. And it's funny because I had all this training in mindfulness, but I liked the exercise component of yoga. But then the more that I started to do it, I really started to realize how good I felt after. Mm. And not just from a physical perspective, but a mental perspective. I felt clear. I felt like my body was calm. My mind was calm. And so then I started to get hooked in yoga then. And so I became a yoga instructor. I did a yoga certification training. So I am a 200-hour yoga instructor as well. And so that was my own personal path. And then as far as teaching it to children, that ended up becoming kind of evolving, something that maybe I didn't even expect to happen. But the patients that I was working with at the children's hospital, I started to see in them very similar things that I had dealt with of anxiety or just overload and stress. And a lot of the children I worked with also had sensory processing disorder. So their nervous systems were really dysregulated and they needed something to help calm their nervous system. And so I started using yoga and mindfulness with them and started seeing huge results.
It's so amazing. I just love hearing people's stories because, you know, I always feel like we're on this path and, you know, just like you, I struggle with anxiety for my whole life. And I always feel like we're on this path and somehow these tools, these things we get exposed to just, you know, you happen to get exposed to this professor with mindfulness and it's like at the time that you need it, it comes to you, you know, if you're open to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just so beautiful. And then just, you know, that you went through that experience and then found yoga and you were able to bring it to your job without really planning to do that. It just shows that it just really fits wherever you are. And that's my favorite thing about yoga and mindfulness is just like everybody can like find like a piece of it that works for them.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And I'm so grateful that those tools came to me when they did. And I totally believe in the things showing up in your life and allowing things to happen organically. So yeah, really beautiful.
Yeah, me too. I really do. And I feel like every struggle, I always tell myself like every struggle that I've had has sort of led me to this next step and to, you know, and to where we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to be doing. So, so I just love it. So you were working in the hospital with children, but then you also did some corporate yoga, events with companies. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to just hear a little bit about that and how that came about and what happened with that.
Yeah. So I started using mindfulness and yoga with children. Actually the first, trial of teaching yoga in a corporate setting was actually at the hospital that I worked at. I was, similarly to a lot of my coworkers, we were experiencing a lot of caregiver burnout and stress, and just we're dealing with a lot of really complex and in some cases some heartbreaking things that are happening for these families. I've worked in both inpatient, so on an acute floor for a hospital, and then in an outpatient setting. And so I started to just on lunch breaks, I'd say, "Hey, come meet me in the therapy gym. And we'll sit down and do a practice together." Mm-hmm. And so it started with just doing breathing exercises together. And then we would do yoga. And I found myself gravitating to that a lot of helping people in their work setting find ways to de-stress and to be more present in their job and to enjoy it. And so then I started to branch out to other companies. Other companies started hearing that I was doing that, and I started advertising a little bit more. And so I started doing yoga and mindfulness with these different corporations. And what was really cool is that I remember the first time that I led a yoga session for this corporation, and it was like a video production company. So really a lot of like techie, very smart people, but also really creative as well. But I wouldn't say that a lot of them had been exposed to yoga. And I remember the first day that everybody showed up, you could tell everybody's looking around at one another like, oh, what did we get ourselves into? You know, some of them were like not necessarily dressed in the appropriate clothing, but they showed up anyway because they're like, well, everybody in the office is here, so I guess I'm going to have to do it. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool to just see the shift. Even in one practice, after that Shavasana, the magic Shavasana, where you finally get to lay down and rest, and just seeing the relaxation on their face, in their body. And then when they sat up, just this whole new shift in energy. So from being kind of a stressed, run from the next thing, really busy kind of work setting, to actually they were able to slow down and connect in a new way. Mm. And then I ended up starting to feel like a part of the family. I would go weekly, and it was a really amazing experience.
Yeah, I love it. And actually during COVID, I started doing corporate. I had never really planned, even though I had my 200 hour, I taught adult classes here and there, but my real focus was teaching kids and families. And so, but during COVID, I just saw so many family members and friends who were trying to work from home and teach their children, and were so stressed. And I had a friend reach out to me and say, you know, I'm a manager of 15 people on my team, and we're struggling. Do you think you can do something with us? And I was like, absolutely. So I started doing some corporate chair yoga via Zoom, and just very short 20-minute sessions. And I mean, everybody, it was the same thing when they popped up on the Zoom, you know, a lot of people were like, I don't know about this. You know, they were like, can we turn our cameras off? Like, we don't know what to expect here, you know? And by the time, you know, we were on the second and third session, they were saying how every week they were looking forward to it. And they were like, we needed this so much. We didn't even realize how much we needed this. Right. So I just think, I know it's so hard. And you know, most of that programming right now is kind of, on pause. A lot of companies are sort of in between going back in the office and still being virtual. And I think it's like a weird transition time right now.
Right.
But I think, and I know it's hard for companies to find the time and the funds to do programs like that for their employees, but I think it's so important. And also going back to how you began with the hospital setting, I was a child life specialist when I
first, I saw that.
Yeah. So I could totally understand. I mean, I wish I had yoga and mindfulness when I was a child life specialist, because it was really emotional and, you know, really stressful. And I think I may have stayed in it longer had I had these tools. You know, I ended up leaving and going into, public education. But, you know, I think that so many companies and so many fields need this practice.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that is important that you brought up. I think a lot of companies, this was similar for this company as well, is it was one of the things that was cut. And I think that's just because a lot of these companies are just trying to survive. And from a budget perspective, it's something that maybe they don't feel like is as vital or necessary. But I would really argue the opposite, that these are the times that we really need these tools to really help us to navigate this really challenging time. And so I've been really impressed with those companies like the one you're talking about that has been thinking outside the box a little bit and trying it over Zoom or things like that. And I'm really hopeful that at least here in Utah, now that things are kind of starting to open up and shift a little bit more, that these companies will start offering these programs again, because I think we're really only at the beginning of seeing some of the effects, or really understanding the effects that this time has had on our mental health. And so I'm really hopeful that that will continue.
Yes, I agree, for adults and for children. So coming back to the practice for children, I agree that, I mean, especially, you know, for kids going back into school and all of these transitions back to quote unquote maybe normal, or what's, I don't know what's going to be normal now. I think we have not even seen the full effect of this past year. And so I know you're beginning to start to do some in-person children programming for the summer. That's so exciting. Right. I am so excited to get back in person with the kids too. So what do you think, what are the most top benefits of this mindfulness and yoga practice for the children coming out of the pandemic?
Yeah, I think there are so many benefits for children. And I think the thing that's also really beautiful about children is that they are innately mindful. You know, like I think a lot of the practices that we do as adults are things that kids really just are natural with. You know, they are really curious and inquisitive and things like that. But I think one of the big things, how it benefits children, I think is that learning the connection with themselves, which I would also say is a huge benefit for adults as well. But when I'm teaching mindfulness to kids, I think it's one of the first places that they may really start to have words to explain some of the things that are happening, or one of the first places that they may be able to notice their thoughts and realize that, hey, we have all these thoughts happening, but not all of them are true. And we can kind of pay attention to some of these thoughts. We don't always have to act on them. They don't, a lot of our thoughts, in fact, are kind of silly and don't really have a purpose. And so to just be aware of our thoughts, there's something, we do a meditation where we will look at our thoughts and kind of watch them go. And there's a whole meditation as if we are watching clouds in the sky. And I think that's a really beautiful practice, especially right now. I think a lot of the kids that I've worked with, they're having a lot of thoughts about like what's next, what's going to happen, am I going to see my friends, what is school going to be like. We just wrapped up school this year, but I know certainly during the school year, there were just constant thoughts about like what's going to come next. And so mindfulness created a really beautiful opportunity to kind of notice all the thoughts that were happening. Some thoughts needed longer time to sit with and spend time with. And then other thoughts, we could kind of just let that thought drift by. But one of the thoughts that just actually, as we're talking about thoughts, one thought that just came to my mind actually also is we talk a lot about feelings as well. So also noticing our feelings and describing them. And one of my favorite memories in one of the mindfulness groups that I led is on the first day, I have them go around the circle and say what their name is and why they're here. And I always give them the out that they can say that their parent forced them. And their parent is sitting next to them. And so usually the parent's like, yep, all right, like I wanted my kid to come. But this one little girl started to share that she had a lot of worries and that she had all these fears and these thoughts that were coming up and she didn't know what to do with them. And we held space for her and we listened to her. And then the next person, she was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that anybody else felt that way too. And she started to tear up, just that ability to hear that some of these feelings are also completely normal and that she wasn't alone. So I love the piece of noticing our thoughts and our feelings. I think that's going to be huge and continue to be huge. One of the pieces that has come up over time, which I've been surprised about, but I think is so helpful, is teaching kids to listen to the cues that their body is sending them. And I think that we're in such a society nowadays that we're so distracted. And I think certainly kids who are now on technology at much younger ages, our environment is just so overstimulating. And I think sometimes they miss out on some clues that their body's sending them. And so we talk a lot about that, like picking up on a signal of like a pit in the stomach, or our heart is racing, or we notice we're clenching our fists. And just teaching these kids how to pick up on those signals, finally they start to recognize like, oh, that was a clue that my body was trying to tell me, oh, I'm starting to get angry, or I'm getting stressed, or whatever it is. And just by noticing those clues sooner, they are able to make a choice in how they want to respond. Mm. So instead of feeling like totally reactionary to some of these things that come up, they're really able to pause and respond.
Yeah, it's so huge. So everything you just said, I love, because first of all, the piece about noticing our thoughts, I mean, and it's so important. And I mean, I didn't learn this until I was probably in my 30s. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's so important for kids to learn that skill, and then to know that when we have a thought, it brings up an emotion or a feeling, right, a physical feeling in our body and our emotions, and that it's all linked together. So these mm-hmm. thoughts that we're having really affect how we're feeling in our body and in our emotions. And then you're right, that comes to the next step of their behavior. I mean, I think it's important for adults to recognize that too. Like when kids are having behaviors that are not what we would maybe choose, mm-hmm. you know, there's thoughts and feelings behind those behaviors. And it's important for the kids to learn that. And then they get a sense of control over that, which is beautiful. And I think I've talked about this before. We always are asking our teenagers to kind of, when they get to that moment and maybe there's a choice that they have to make, you know, whether that be alcohol or whatever the thing is that's standing in front of them, we ask them to like, listen to their gut instinct, right. But we haven't really taught them how to do that. And so mm-hmm. I think it starts so young, getting these kids to listen to their body. When you have that little, like you said, that little pit in your stomach or that tightness in your throat, and you know, like your body's telling you like, something's off here, you know, listen mm-hmm. to it. And I think it's really important to start young. We can't just expect them to be able to do that when they get to those pivotal times, you know, in their life, when they're sort of going out without us being right there. Mm-hmm. They need yeah. to practice those skills.
Yeah. Something you said, Kelly, made me think a little bit, and we don't necessarily talk about this in the mindfulness programs, at least that I lead. We talk more about the physical sensations and what emotion it could mean. But just as you were talking, I was thinking about, especially with teenagers, the more that we work on this, not only are we teaching them to pick up on the clues that their body is sending them for an emotion, but also to pick up on the clues of their own intuition, mm-hmm. you know, and to really actually pause and notice, like, how does this make me feel? You know, is this a decision that I want to make?
Right.
And what does my body need right now? And what is going to honor me in the best way? And so it may start out with some of these tools of just picking up on clues your body's sending from a physical perspective, but for an emotion, but also like that inner knowing of yep. what's the right decision for me, and which is so huge, especially as we get into adolescence.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I have two teenagers in my house, and it's, you know, it's what we talk about all the time, you know,
right.
because, you know, now one's driving, and, you know, it's, you have to kind of let go a little bit as a parent and, you know, kind of just send them out there and hope that, you know, they're going to be able to, you know, make those good choices, and practicing listening to that instinct and their body and how things make them feel. You know, if something's making you feel uncomfortable, it's okay to, right. to step away and, you know, listen to your body. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so important.
Another thing that I did want to touch on is that I love the loving kindness piece, and that typically in the mindfulness programs I run, it's usually the last one that we really talk about this kind of the metta meditation, if you're familiar with it, which I'm sure yes. you are, but loving ourselves and wishing ourselves all of these things like peace and comfort and good health, whatever it is, wishing that for yourself, but then also wishing it for someone else. And I have just been amazed at some of the wishes that these children have come up with for their peers, even some wishes for people who have passed on that they really miss, sending them love. Mm-hmm. And so Yeah, I couldn't go on without saying that I think that that is one of the huge pieces in mindfulness, as we talked about, is this connection to ourself, but the connection to others and really showing up and loving ourselves first, and then coming from a place of love where we can show up and love other people wholeheartedly. And kids are amazing at that as well.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I am in a lot of my programs. We talk about, you know, schools are, you know, encouraging kids to be kind and, you know, invite people to sit down who don't have a place to sit and all of those things. And in a lot of my school programs, I talk about first that starts with us teaching our kids to love themselves and to Right. understand their own emotions, because then they can have empathy and, you know, feel for others. If they can understand how they feel, then they can identify with others on how they might be feeling and then be able to show that kindness. So I love that. I love the loving kindness meditation as mm-hmm. well. And I do that often in my classes too. And I actually just, we're recording this the first week of June. I just released an episode today about kids having trouble saying kind things to themselves. I did a whole week of classes last week about talking kind to others and to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And kids really, especially my tweens and teens, girls really had a hard time saying something kind about themselves. And it really made me think like a lot this week that I was like, oh my goodness, why is that? Why are they struggling to say something kind about themselves? And then I really started thinking about like, well, are we modeling that for them as adults, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's really, really important coming to, you know, talk about parents and teachers kind of being those models for your children to show kindness and compassion for yourself and to be able to say something nice about yourself and feel proud about yourself and say it out loud in front of your kids, because you're showing them that that's normal and that's okay. And they should do that as well and be, you know, talk kindly to themselves.
Right. Yeah. I think that is hugely important. And I think I'm so glad that you said that, because I think if there is one really big key thing that I want my group members to feel who are in the mindfulness program, or just children in general that I work with, is I want them to feel seen, loved, and appreciated. And that's how I show up with every class. But I also see what you're talking about, where I may show that to them, but a lot of them, they do have a hard time accepting that. And they have a lot of critical thoughts about themselves. And even, you know, from speaking for myself, coming into adulthood, that's been one of the things that I've really had to work on, is showing myself grace and compassion mm-hmm. for, you know, if I make a mistake or something is challenging. I think some of the ingrained patterns that we all have is to like, oh, well, I just got to push harder. And, you know, I didn't do well at that and beat myself up. But if we can really come from this place of showing compassion to ourselves and love, it transforms. I think it really would transform our world. And that sounds really out there, but I think it's so huge.
Yes, I agree. It's like, it really could. If everybody could get on board with that, it could transform the world. You are absolutely right. I know it sounds, mm-hmm. that sounds like a huge task, but it mm-hmm. really, really could. And so speaking of that, I always like to ask my guests to give tips for parents and teachers. If they want to start a mindfulness practice mm-hmm. and start incorporating it into their day, what are some tips you might give them to get started?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so there's two different forms of meditation, or let me actually clarify that, because I think a lot of times when people hear the word mindfulness and meditation, they assume that they're the same thing. Mm-hmm. And in fact, sometimes I notice myself when I'm talking about it, sometimes I'll use them interchangeably. But when we're talking about mindfulness, I like to use the definition by Amy Saltzman, which is mindfulness means paying attention in a particular way on purpose with kindness and curiosity, and then choosing our behavior. And so when we're talking about mindfulness, we're talking about all of these qualities that we've been discussing, the kindness, the curiosity, more of that introspection, and being in the present moment. So those are the really key pieces. Meditation is one way to be more mindful. So some people will really gravitate towards a formal practice, which would be a formal meditation practice, would be either listening to a guided meditation, or even sitting in silence and observing your thoughts, or there's walking meditations and things like that. Something also that I really like to tell people is that when you meditate, we don't always have to be in this rigid sitting position. And both adults and kids, that may not be the right position. So it could be laying down, it could be sitting in a chair, it could be in a comfy spot on your couch, a place. I like to find a place that the kid feels really safe and comforted. So they get to choose a spot that they might want to sit and makes them feel safe and cozy, and maybe has their favorite things like blankets or things like that. But that's more of a formal meditation practice. And some people really enjoy that. I am one of those people. I really enjoy meditation. I enjoy guided meditation and also just sitting in silence and kind of observing some of those thoughts that come up, just like we were talking about. Mm-hmm. But if people don't, if that's not something that they're not really gravitating towards, I want to give them so much compassion and tell them that that's okay. Also, I would say don't give up on it completely. Maybe start off small. So I recommend for kids 1 minute per their year of age. So if you have a 5-year-old, no more than 5 minutes, and that's probably even going to be challenging. If they're under the age of 8, I really like to have a parent practice with them. And that's also a perfect opportunity for the parent to really model this co-regulation. I think co-regulation is so huge when we're looking at this. So if we're wanting our kid to learn mindfulness and to meditate, then it's a really great opportunity to sit with them and practice with them. And then if they're over the age of 8, which is typically the age for my mindfulness groups that I run, they do a little bit better doing the meditations on their own. But again, I try not to get over that 1 minute per age of practice. And so for adults listening, that doesn't necessarily apply for you. So you don't have to, you're like, oh crap, I'm gonna have to meditate for, 50 minutes or something like that. But I would say similarly, just like how we start with children, start off small. So start with maybe you're just doing a 5-minute simple guided meditation and kind of see how that sits. The biggest thing that I also tell people is that a lot of people that I talk to, they give up after the first few times. And the reasons that they tell me is that they say, I couldn't shut off my mind, or my mind was way too busy. And that's actually perfect, right? That's actually like what our minds do. And they're doing that all the time. And they're probably doing it in the background all the time, maybe without us realizing it. And so suddenly we're sitting down and we're like, oh my gosh, I have so many thoughts that are happening. And so that's just a great opportunity to sit with them again, just like we talked about, to notice those thoughts, but kind of let them come and go. And this idea that we have to control or force our thoughts or change them, actually, I think makes them more challenging. Whereas if we notice them and kind of allow them space, then a lot of times those thoughts will kind of eventually work themselves out. So the big takeaways for that, again, are just giving yourself grace and knowing that, especially when you start, you're going to notice that your mind is really busy. And then there will be some days where it's a lot easier and maybe you don't have as many thoughts, but every time you sit down for your practice, it's going to feel different and maybe look a little different, because moment by moment and day by day, we are constantly changing and our experience is changing. So that's a formal practice. And then there's also what we refer to as an informal practice. And the informal practice, I would argue, is just as a formal practice. In fact, maybe in some ways more important. So the informal practice is adding more mindful moments throughout our day. And so that could be, I'm just thinking about parents, for example, who are picking up their kids from school. This year may look very different because they've probably a lot of I know a lot of schools, they've been at home, so they're very used to just having them there all the time, which some of these mindfulness tools would be really helpful in these situations as well. But you're picking up your kid from school, and maybe you have all these messages that you're responding to or emails, and you're feeling like pulled in a million different directions. Mindfulness and an informal practice would be allowing yourself to pause. So putting down the phone, maybe just taking some few deep breaths, and really focusing on the present moment and what is it that you want to bring into the next moment when your kid walks in and pulls open that door and hops in the car. And if you are showing up intentionally and from a present place, then you will be able to connect with your kid more. You'll be paying attention to those moments that really matter to you, of seeing the smile on their face and hearing about their day and being able to connect with them instead of feeling distracted and like you have to rush from one thing to the next. And then at the end of the day, you look back and realize that you missed a lot of those moments. So it can be as simple as just pausing and really taking in what you're doing. So if you're getting really distracted, just allowing yourself, like, what is it right here that I'm noticing? What is it right here that I want to pay attention to? And one of the easiest ways to do that is to bring our awareness to our senses. So, what are some things that you're seeing around you that are really beautiful, or that you're noticing, or the smells, or the textures that you're feeling? Washing the dishes. I try to remind myself this every time I wash the dishes because I am not a fan of washing the dishes. But I notice my mind is like wandering and thinking about when is this going to be over. But taking time to just, and even as simple as like enjoying the sensation of the soap and the smells of hopefully not your dirty dishes, but hopefully the smell of your soap, and just taking a minute to pause and slow down. And those are the moments to add up that over time really matter. Those moments of being here, present and intentional, instead of letting those moments pass you by. So those were the formal and informal practice. Would you like some more recommendations for kids specifically? I know those were kind of a little bit more for parents.
I mean, they're great because I think even for kids, those informal practices, we can incorporate the kids into those sometimes too. And just I know I do that with my kids. My daughter's she's in first grade, and she had a little trouble transitioning back to in-person learning. And so, the drop-off, we try to do those mindful practices while we're sitting online waiting for her to get out of school. I mean, for her to get out of the car to go to school. And we will just roll the windows down and listen to the birds, or, I might have her like choose her favorite song, and we might just sit and listen to the song together. And I think that that's a great way that for the adults to do those. I mean, I agree, those, I think the informal practices can be more impactful. Although I love getting on my mat and I love my meditation practice, but those daily practices all day long throughout your day, I think can be really impactful for all those reasons that you said. And I think we can teach our kids to do the same thing. And sometimes it's just reminding them to pay attention to their senses too. So I think that's a great tip for both adults and for kids. So thank you. They were great.
Oh, good.
And I know you also have a podcast, so I'd love to hear about how that got started and kind of what's your goal and inspiration for that.
Well, so I had a podcast way back in, it was before podcasts were even really a huge thing, back in 2000. Oh gosh, I think it was 2012. And it was a podcast about occupational therapy. And so it was one of the first occupational therapy podcasts out there. And so that gave me a lot of experience just learning about the podcasting world, although it's very different now. And in some ways, I think a lot easier and nicer options for how we can connect when you're not in the same room as somebody. So that kind of got me into it. But as time has evolved, mindfulness has really become my passion. And so I really missed having that opportunity to connect with different people and hear other people's stories and share tips and tools with other people and connect with like-minded individuals who really care about this stuff as much as I do. And so that's why I launched the Incorporate Mindfulness podcast, is that I wanted to share some of the work that I was doing with children and adults, to share some of the resources that I felt were really helpful, but also to just connect with some really amazing people. And I think that the more that we can connect and share this information with one another, then hopefully more people will also get interested in mindfulness and will take it on to a part of their daily life. So, the saying that I always say in my podcast is that I truly believe that we can create positive change one mindful moment at a time. And so Absolutely. That could be a podcast, listening to a podcast interview. It could be pausing and taking one of those informal mindful moments. But my hope is to create more mindful moments for people through listening to the podcast.
I love it. I love it because, you know, it's like my mission too with this podcast. So it's so exciting, like you said, to connect with like-minded people. And I love podcasts and I've been listening to yours and it's awesome. So thank you for showing up in the space and spreading the word more, because I think it's so, so important.
Absolutely.
So I know you're going to be offering some summer classes. So if you want to share about what you have coming up, and then let our listeners know where they can connect with you and follow along in your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in Utah, locally in the Salt Lake area. And so the groups that I'm running now, I am so excited about, because I was not able to run any groups for, it's been almost a year and a half, almost 2 years, really, since I've been able to run a group with everything going on with COVID. And so I am going to be running groups this summer. I have two summer programs that I'm running. One of them is specifically, come the beginning of August, is tailored at helping kids gain the skills and tools to help prepare them for getting back to school. And so we'll be specifically working on a lot of these foundational mindfulness tools that we've been talking about in this episode, but we will also be working on ways to set intentions. So before the school day starts, ways to calm your body, center your mind, and maybe even set an intention of what you would like that day to look like, which is something that I do every single day. And I think for students will be amazing. And then just some tools to help them as they transition back to school to deal with, I think, a lot of the stress that they're feeling of having a year. For a lot of them, they were on virtual learning or only came back for partially part of the time. So we'll be incorporating all of those tools. So I'm really excited. So those are for groups for people that live here locally in Utah. And then in the future, so I'll be sharing that on my Instagram, which is Michelle's Mindful Moments. And so if people want to follow along, I will be sharing a lot of the activities that we're doing. And throughout the summer, I'll be sharing mindful tips of how to create a more mindful summer. So even if you don't live here locally, which my guess is many of the listeners are not going to be local, that's a great place to check in and to get some tools. And then I am in the process of building some online courses and materials. So you can keep checking on the Instagram. That will be a great place that I'll, as soon as that lands, then I'll be posting about that as well. And then, as Kelly mentioned, my podcast is Incorporate Mindfulness. And on Facebook, my Facebook handle is Incorporate Mindfulness.
Great. I'll link all of those in the show notes, so it's easy for people to find you. The summer classes sound amazing, and I'm excited to follow along on Instagram and see what you're doing. Thank you so, so much for joining me today. It was so great talking with you.
Thank you, Kelly. I really appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me on my mission to spread peace and joy by introducing children and families to the power of yoga and mindfulness. I could not achieve this goal without all of you listening and trying these tips with the kids in your life. If you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, please subscribe and leave me a review. If you would also suggest this podcast to parents and teachers, I would be so grateful. If you would like to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram at Mindful Moments for Families and on Facebook at Kidding Around Yoga with Kelly. For more information on my offered programs, such as yoga classes for children and adults, workshops and professional development, and corporate chair yoga, visit my website at kiddingaroundyoga.com/Kelly. I'll see you all here on our next episode, but in the meantime, remember, take a deep breath.